Inside Books with Breda Brown.
Welcome to Inside Books, a programme about the magical world of writing. I'm Breda Brown, and in each episode of Inside Books, we chat to people associated with the world of books, including well-known authors, publishers, editors, agents, critics, booksellers, and more. You'll find Inside Books on all audio platforms, and our Twitter handle is at InsideBooksIRE, where you'll also find lots of other interesting books news. My guest today is journalist and author Claire Coughlan. As a journalist, Claire has written for a variety of publications. She was a feature writer and book reviewer with the Sunday Independent and reporter for Book Brunch. She was also deputy editor of Woman's Way at one stage and has worked as a freelance editor for the Inkwell Group and as a copywriter for a range of clients. Claire has previously been the recipient of Arts Council funding as well as a literature bursary from Dublin City Council. And she also took part in the Words Ireland National Mentoring Programme, which is funded by Kildare Arts Service and the Arts Council. On top of all of that, she has an MA and an MFA in creative writing from UCD. Her first novel is called Where They Lie. It's a murder mystery set in 1940s and 1960s Dublin, and it's out now and it's published by Simon and Schuster. Claire, now, the main character in your book, she's a journalist, she's called Nicoletta Sarto, and I was loving the fact that it was an Italian name, but yes, she's Irish. And I was trying to figure out, why did Claire go down that route? And then I realised, when I was looking into your background, you actually did Italian in college.
I did indeed, yeah. I've always loved Italian language and culture and the country. And I chose to do it, to study it at college, kind of on a whim. I did an arts degree in UCD and I did English as my other subject. And yeah, I've just always loved anything to do with Italy. And I did a little bit of research about the Italian community in Ireland, and apparently all the people who immigrated to Dublin and the rest of the country from Italy all came from a town called Casalatico.
All right.
Near Rome, and set up in the hospitality industries. And yeah, just the character of Nicoletta kind of grew, and I just decided to make her Italian. I don't know.
Why? Well, it works. Yeah. Absolutely. No, and don't worry, we'll be coming back to the book now later on. But, and let's go back then. When did you start? When did you start writing? Was it a young age?
A very young age, Breda. Yeah, I always knew I wanted to be a writer, as strange as that sounds. But my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, wrote short stories and sent them off to different publications. And I decided that was a really cool thing to do. And when I was about 11, tried to get published in Ireland's Own.
And really?
Yeah, I got a lovely, for an essay, and I got a lovely rejection note. And
what was the essay about?
Spring.
Okay. Why not?
Why not? Yeah. And I was kind of hooked on the process by then. And
even though it was a rejection.
Even though it was a rejection, I thought, this is great. And I wrote all during my teenage years and didn't show it to anyone. And then I studied English in college, but decided that journalism was probably a more feasible route if you wanted to write, because I didn't know anyone. This was just before Cecilia Hearn became the massive success that she was at such an impressive young age. But I thought, maybe I need a bit more life experience and a more tangible way of entering a profession, I suppose.
And a career, I suppose. And
yeah,
that's where the journalism came in. You wrote for a lot of magazines, and you did quite a bit in that sense, and then sort of morphed into a books journalist. So how did that come about?
So I started off in news and features, and the books journalism thing, I've always loved books, and I always loved interviewing authors. I interviewed Tana French for the Evening Herald when her first novel came out, and I just loved her writing, and I just loved the setting of Dublin.
Mm. We're big fans of her here.
Yes, yeah. She's fabulous. And I didn't know that being a books journalist was a thing. And then I took a little break and did the MA in creative writing. And I was freelance at the time. And when I came back, things went a little quiet. It was just the recession had just hit. And I worked in a different job. Like, I worked in an English language school for a few years.
Oh, interesting.
And took a career break, yeah. And then I I actually did the MFA in creative writing then as well. And
why not?
Why not?
Let's
exactly.
Do everything at the same time. Exactly.
And then when I started back in journalism, I started doing reviews for the Sunday Independent, and that fed into doing features as well about what was going on in the world of books. And I got a job with UK publication Book Brunch as their kind of roving reporter.
Which is great.
Yeah, no, which was fabulous. And
so do you think then all of that fed into your urge to write, and did it give you that drive then to pursue it?
Definitely, because I felt a bit more, when I was working as a books journalist, I felt a bit more connected to the world of publishing, and it wasn't a case of it's a closed shop and you're getting rejections from faceless agents and publishers. I was meeting people at events and making the connections, putting the face to the name, and that makes a big difference, I think.
Absolutely.
That was how I met my agent as well, Sheila Crowley at Curtis Brown as well.
Okay.
Through Book Brunch, yeah.
Good. Well, that's, as you said, the more you extend the network, then, you know, and you make your own look as well.
No, and it's a people business, as you know as well, the same with journalism as well, so...
So you were writing away then in the background. When did you start the novel?
I had the idea for the novel about 10 years ago. I had the idea for the character Gloria Fitzpatrick, the abortionist. And I thought I was writing literary fiction, and I was kind of writing bits and pieces kind of from Gloria's interior point of view, her interior life. And I sent it out, and the feedback was, you know, it's a bit quiet, which is the dreaded publishing term for nothing really is happening.
Yeah. Okay.
And
so did you have to go back to the drawing board then and just...
Well, I started thinking then, like, I applied for mentoring with Woe Mentoring, and I have always loved reading crime fiction. So I was like, why don't I try and make this a crime novel? Like, who's actually telling the story? That's what my mentor, who I was paired with, Tammy Cohn, asked me. She was like, who's...
She's the crime novelist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She was like, who's telling the story, and where are you starting? They were the main pointers that she gave me. So I, that's when I'd had the character of Nicolette in my head for a while anyway. And I was like, well, this is where obviously she comes in. And
you found that mentoring aspect then really helpful, did you?
Really, really helpful, yeah. Like, not prescriptive or anything, like, just it made a big difference to me in terms of a little bit of confidence at a time when I needed it, but also someone who was actually working in the world of books and making writing their living was telling me,
Here's
how to go about it, and you can make a career, you can make it happen for yourself.
And did she read some of your work then after you had gone back and tweaked it?
Yeah, she did, yeah, and she was very encouraging, definitely,
right.
Yeah.
And that set you on the on the path,
yeah,
as they
did,
say.
Yeah.
And so you had the idea, obviously, for Gloria, as you said, as you described her, the abortionist. So how did you pad it out more then? You were told it was quiet and you needed to have more happening. And so, then you layered in the crime genre. So
yeah,
a lot going
exactly.
on there then.
Yeah, there was a lot going on. But I, when I did the MA and MFA in creative writing, it was absolutely brilliant experience. And I suppose that's where I learned how to write. But it wasn't so much about commercial fiction, about plotting. And I read a lot of books about script writing and kind of immersed myself in how you actually plot something.
Mm-hmm.
And
how do you plot something?
I'm still figuring it out. And so I realised that my book needed a protagonist, which was the Nicoletta character, whereas Gloria was more an antagonist and she couldn't carry the whole novel, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she, I realised that we're not really meant to see that much of her.
She's in the background.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Causing problems.
Yes.
And again, with Nicoletta, you took it from the point of view of a journalist.
Yeah.
Obviously, well, that makes sense given her background, because a lot of people in this scenario will go down the police route, or that she's a police officer, you know. So, but you wanted the journalist.
Yes, because I have never worked as I thought doing a police procedural would be too hard. Like, I would get it wrong. I was too afraid of getting it wrong. Like, obviously I've taken liberties with the whole journalism aspect a lot, in that, like, it is fiction, and I'm sure if a journalist could be reading it being like, yeah, well, no one ever opened up that much to me, you know. Mm-hmm. But
now, this was the other interesting part is you said it in 1960s,
yes,
Dublin. So it's a 1960s newsroom,
yes,
and journalistic
exactly.
aspect.
So there's a remove there definitely. Like, it's not me.
That gave you a bit more wiggle room, did it?
Yes, it did. Yeah. It definitely did. Yeah,
yeah. And I love the intertwining timelines, because you are talking about 1940s Dublin and 1960s Dublin. Mm. You know, and that was obviously a decision you made as well. You wanted to write about those two eras,
because they weren't that far removed from each other. Like, I know 1968, the 60s were swinging in London, but they weren't so much in Dublin. Although there were kind of influences creeping in, but the 1943, when the action happens in the other timeline, wasn't that far removed from the Dublin of 1968, and I kind of wanted to show that. But things were starting to change maybe a bit. What do they say? They don't. The 60s didn't happen in Ireland until like the 90s.
Yeah. 1980s, I was going to say, given the fashion and all the rest.
Yeah.
And, you know, Goma 2, we've had authors on who have done 2-3 intertwining timelines. Did you find that difficult, or how did you find it?
No, I found it great, because there's kind of, it's very freeing in a way, because you get to go off on little tangents and then go back to where you were. I loved writing from the point of view of Gloria. Like, I found it very, it's just pure imagination, you know, and I loved getting inside her head, kind of trying to figure out what made her tick. And I think with Nicoletta, it's more straightforward, because she's kind of walking from A to B all the time, all around the city.
Yeah, and trying to find answers.
Yes, exactly. Mm.
And on that research then, again, you weren't here, 1940s, 1960s.
Yeah.
So in terms of getting Dublin right and, you know, getting the country right. And I loved all of that. And you seem to have done a fantastic job.
Thanks,
and even with some of the locations and everything around Dublin. So did you enjoy that?
I really enjoyed that, actually. I used to walk the pier in Dunleary a lot, and I love Sandy Cove all around there. Where a lot of the action happens. Although Sea View Terrace and Sea View House is made up.
Total fiction.
Yeah. But I did kind of, like, there is, Nicoletta walks the city sometimes, like, some people are like, but how did she get there so quickly? Mm. Like, I have taken liberties with
Timings
and
that's okay.
Yeah,
we'll let you. The other interesting part is it very much again looks at the role of women in society and in the workplace.
Absolutely, yeah.
At a time and a place when, you know, being a working woman was either a choice between you had a career or you had a family, one or the other. So was that a theme you definitely wanted to explore?
Yes, it was, and that was very applicable to Irish women, and it still is, I think, you know, even with the referendum we have coming up on the 8th of March. It's not so much still seen as either or, but
it's an issue.
It's an issue, yeah. Mm. And I think childcare and children still is a very gendered issue, although we've come a long way since the 1960s, but it's still, we've still got some way to go.
And I love in the newsroom side of things, there was an awful lot of smoking going on.
Oh, yeah, an awful lot of smoking.
Wouldn't happen today.
That's when you could smoke in the workplace, yeah.
Exactly. So how long did it take to write then?
So I'd had the idea for a few years, and I'd written bits and pieces of the Gloria perspective. But it took me about 3 years from just before when my daughter was born, which was 2019. And then I got the offer from Simon & Schuster in February 2022.
And were you working as well at that point? So you were fitting in the writing around work?
No, I didn't go back after maternity leave. So I was doing a little bit of freelance, but not that much. So,
so you were able to focus on the writing?
Yeah, I was.
And did you enjoy that?
I really enjoyed that, yeah. And it's fitting writing in around naps and stuff like that really focus me as well. because I'm a bit of a procrastinator. So
just, have to get on with it.
Yeah.
And so is it true then that you interviewed a publisher? As you said, Simon & Schuster have it now, that you interviewed a publisher and they ended up publishing the book. Is that right?
They did, yes,
okay,
that is
go
right.
Go on, tell us the story. Go on, serendipity here.
Yeah, no, it was total serendipity. So I did a profile on Catherine Armstrong, who's now my publisher at Simon & Schuster, for Book Brunch, and met her in London in 2018, before COVID and everything. So we didn't know what was ahead of us at that point. And we got on really well. She was at her previous job at Bonnier, and it was kind of about the article was kind of hung on the fact that crime and thrillers were really, really popular at the time. I think this was just before the cozy crime phenomenon took off, but we got on really well, and she knew I was writing a novel because I never shut up about it.
Right. And to encourage you to do it.
Exactly, yeah. To give myself accountability, I suppose. And I actually saw it in the trade press then that she'd gone to Simon & Schuster, and she's deputy publishing director there. So I very cheekily emailed her and said, would you read it again? And she said, absolutely. So I sent it to her, and I was absolutely... could be knocked over with a feather when she said they wanted to make an offer. And that's when I got Sheila Crowley on board then as well.
At that point.
Yeah.
And how did you find would you give people advice of having an agent as well to help in that process?
Definitely, yes. An agent is always going to be the one in your corner. Like, Sheila's been really, really helpful in loads of different aspects, but mainly for... like the contract. And an agent will always have your corner in terms of, like, if there's anything, no one wants to talk about the if it all goes wrong.
But like, we're all trying to be positive here.
Yeah, no, exactly. But like, no, if there's anything that you want to query, or, and also for your foreign rights, film and TV rights, an agent will look after that.
And that's their area of expertise.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to yours. Yeah. And was there much work to be done on the book then at that point? You know, so when Catherine looked at it and said, okay, we're ready to go, what needed to be done then?
What needed to be done? Well, it was only quite a bit, actually. Although she was like, no, I think it's great. I don't think there's that much work to be done. And then... She let it be my realization that
there was
about 20,000 words to be added to it.
Right, okay.
Because it's great. Because
but you'd write that up in a weekend.
But she never. She allowed me to come to that realization myself. Yeah.
Mm, okay. And was it hard adding that?
It was just a matter of developing a couple of streamlining a couple of things, and also a bit more character development for Nicolette in particular.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there's a twist in the middle where...
There's a couple of twists. Yeah. Yeah. And on the plotting side then as well, did you, you know, when you sat down to write it, did you plot it?
Yeah, I actually did. I love plotting. It's one of my favourite things. It's a way of procrastinating, I think.
Like, I can see a theme coming through here.
I'm going to sit down and it's like sitting down to study and having all your highlighters lined up and your different
coloured
pens. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So how do you approach the plotting then?
Well, I start with... There's a really good book that I love, that I always recommend. It's called Stealing Hollywood by Alexandra Solikoff.
Okay.
And it's about dividing your book into 8 acts. And so the first one will be the inciting incident, where like there's a call to action to your hero. So in Where They Lie, that was when the phone call came into the newsroom for Nicoletta.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the book I'm writing at the moment, it's where a woman comes into the newspaper office saying she wants to speak to Nicoletta urgently.
Okay.
Everything
starts.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So 8 acts. That's interesting, because we've had other authors on, including Brian McGilloway, yeah. who says he does it in three acts, yeah. a third, and a third.
Yeah. No, that probably makes more sense. Mm. But this is to this Alexander Solokhov method. It's supposed to make you avoid having a soggy middle.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did that work?
Well, I hope so.
Right.
Although it's just kind of to stop the pace slowing. Yeah. You know.
And especially in crime.
Especially in crime. It's a cardinal sin to bore your reader or have them have their mind wandering. So
we need to keep going. So you've mentioned the one you're working on at the moment. Can we take it? It's a sequel then if it's in the newsroom and Nicoletta is still there?
Oh, yes, it is a sequel. Yeah, it's set a year and a half later in the summer of 1970. And a woman comes in who is a barrister, Louise Leonard, saying that her aunt, Helen Leonard, who was a minor character in book one, has died and her paid carer has vanished.
Mm.
And she thinks that her aunt was murdered or that the circumstances were nefarious. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And she wants Nicoletta to investigate, so she does.
And she does.
Yes.
Okay. How has the second book been? Easier? Harder?
Easier in the sense that, like, I feel like I know what I'm doing. Harder in the sense that I've no idea what I'm doing.
That's it.
Because each book is different and I think it feels like you're starting again each time completely. Mm.
Even though, is it easier, you know, because obviously it's a series now that you have the characters and you have a structure there and you know them.
Yes, absolutely. It is from that point of view that I feel I know Nicoletta quite well and it's been fun kind of bringing her on to a different stage in her life and everything. So, yeah, there is progression from that point of view.
And where are you at with it?
I've halfway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And Catherine's at you going, where is it?
Yeah.
Where is it? Obviously, do you have plans for more then for Nicoletta after that, if it is a series?
I do in my head, yes. Mm-hmm. It's a 2-book deal with Simon & Schuster, so we'll have to see after that, you know.
And take it from there. And the reviews of number one are out at the moment, so was it strange reading those?
Very strange at the beginning, yeah. Like, I used to pounce on online reviews. Mm. I don't read Amazon reviews anymore, though, or Goodreads.
Mm. Some authors have said that.
Yeah.
They tend to stay away from them.
Yes, yeah.
They take the negative as opposed to the positive out of them.
Oh,
that's the problem.
The negative bias in all our brains is like that little phrase, that nasty little phrase that a reviewer might leave kind of sticks in your head.
Circling.
I know
you
review books as well, but like you're a lovely reviewer. You'd never...
Thank you.
And that's for like a newspaper. This is different when like people are reviewing like lawnmowers and coffee pods, and then they'll write a review of a book and give it 1 star because
they didn't like the feel of the page or the font or something.
Exactly,
exactly. So just looking back, and I suppose for anybody listening, you know, who's writing at the moment, you know, you've had a busy year the last year with obviously getting the book finalised and out. Anything you do differently?
Anything I do differently? I don't think so, to be honest.
Mm.
I think at the beginning I wouldn't have listened to other people's opinions as much in terms of like, I think it took me a while to find my voice. And I think when I started writing like 10, 15 years ago, I was very influenced by what other people thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't... I'd be more inclined to stick to my guns now, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your gut, you
exactly,
know, in terms of what you feel will work.
But that only comes with age and confidence, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Totally agree. Well, look, we loved book one. We're very much looking forward to book two.
Amazing.
And loved Nicoletta. Just she was really interesting in engaging characters. So we'll be keeping an eye on her journeys. Claire Coughlan, thank you for joining us here on Inside Books. And you'll find Where They Lie online or at your local bookshop now. The next episode of Inside Books will be out soon. Just keep an eye on our Twitter feed for details. The handle is @InsideBooksIRE. Inside Books is a Unique Media production with research by Niall Matthews, and if you'd like to hear other episodes, just search for us on the various audio platforms and don't forget to leave us a rating or review. I'm Breida Brown. Until next time, keep reading.
Inside Books is a Unique Media production.